now. Live from the historic parsonage of 19th century gospel minister George Norcross in downtown Carlisle, Pennsylvania. It's Iron Sharpens Iron, a radio platform on which pastors, Christian scholars, and theologians address the burning issues facing the church and the world today. Proverbs 27, verse 17 tells us, "Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." Matthew Henry said that in this passage, quote, "We are cautioned to take heed whom we converse with, and directed to have in view in conversation to make one another wiser and better." It is our hope that this goal will be accomplished over the next hour, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. Now here's our host, Chris Arnson.
Good afternoon, Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, Lake City, Florida, and the rest of humanity living on the planet Earth who are listening via live streaming at IronSharpensIronRadio.com. This is Chris Arnson, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, wishing you all a happy Friday on this third day of August 2018. And I'm so delighted to have back as a returning guest today, Tom Nuwolis. And he is going to be speaking this time on his book, Not All Conservatives Are Constitutionalists. And Tom Nuwolis is president and CEO of NCDCS Incorporated, with over 30 years in business and organizational analysis, with experience in strategic planning, financial and organizational management, having delivered business and technical studies, and having made presentations at industry conferences in the United States and Europe, a member of the technical advisory boards for emerging companies, as well as the Fortune 500, an internationally published writer, a member of the National Association of Corporate Directors, and the World Intellectual Property Organization, whose studies include the United States Constitution, the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers, Joseph Story's Commentaries, Blackstone, Locke, de Tocqueville, Madison's Notes, and the various states' ratifying conventions, as well as original source writings of Samuel Adams and his contemporaries, the Reformation with an emphasis on the Scottish Reformation, Lex Rex, the Puritans, and Covenant, the First Great Awakening, and the sermons the founders heard preached. He is the chair of constitutional economics at Thomas Jefferson Center for Constitutional Studies. He's a board member of We the People, Washington. He's the author of The Tale of Two Constitutions and three other books in the works, Depths of Tyranny, As Predicted, The Anti-Federalist Got It Right, Liberty to Economy, and Rethinking Property Rights Today. He's a board member of Samuel Adams Center for Political Science and blogger at SamuelAdamsReturns.net. Today we are discussing his book, Not All Conservatives Are Constitutionalists, and it's my honor and privilege to welcome you back to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, Tom Nuwolis.
Thank you. Delighted to be here, Chris.
And I'm sorry if I'm butchering your last name. I know that I got it correct the last time, but I don't know if I was so providentially blessed this time.
Hey, you're doing very well. I'm proud of you.
All right, thanks. And just to let our listeners know, Tom, unfortunately, has a sore throat today, and it may be affecting his patterns of speech. But we ask of you to pray that he gets through the program unscathed and can maintain his voice through the entire two-hour program today. Well, before we go to our topic today, Tom, I'm going to give our email address for anybody who would like to join us on the air with a question about the United States Constitution and how this has any bearings upon Christianity today. And our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And please give us your first name, at least your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. And before we go into the topic, tell our listeners something about the Thomas Jefferson Center for Constitutional Studies, where you are chair of constitutional economics.
Thomas Jefferson Center was established number of years ago by Drs. Cleon Skousen and another gentleman, his son-in-law. Interestingly enough, they're a little bit more broad than where some people would put some labels on them. It's been a very unique experience. There's a number of things that have been slowing down in that environment. And most recently, I have taken and stepping away from them since we last talked, actually, in that I am strictly focusing on what I'm doing with Samuel Adams and the radio programs, the blogging, and what I'm doing on the video as well with the Samuel Adams Samuel Adams programs.
Well, tell us about the Samuel Adams Center. So tell us about the Samuel Adams Center for Political Science.
The Samuel Adams Center for Political Science has been developed to help the youth understand those foundational principles of our founders. I mean, it just comes simply to that, to some of what you spoke of already. How do they take and grasp the principles of constitutionalism, which we're going to be talking about in this book, in such a manner that it says, okay, how do we self-govern, and then what does that mean into that extensibility of governing within our local, state, and federal government? And what does it mean to develop policy, and what are those policies, what should be the root of the policy? So when we take and we look at that our sovereign lord is over all government, then how do students understand that principle, those biblical principles, and once again, I use that term, the transcendence of God's sovereignty into all things, all aspects of life, and then into that whole realm of being able to govern according to his principles.
Great. I posted, you may have even saw it, I posted a meme on my Facebook page because I really love the quote by Patrick Henry. Patrick Henry, who is most known for the quote, give me liberty or give me death. Patrick Henry said in this meme, the Constitution is not a document for the government to restrain the people. It is an instrument for the people to restrain the government. Do you agree with that quote?
I do, absolutely. From Samuel Adams' perspective, Patrick Henry, being much, much younger, had a good grasp on those fundamental principles. Patrick Henry, again, being a believer, totally understood the order of what government should be, and that we as individuals and those that are in authority all submit to the living God. Therefore, when we look at constitutional government, which is our form of government in this republic, not a democracy, but in the republic, is that we the people are the sovereigns and that the government submits to us, that being the agency submits to us, because in essence, we happen to be the government as being those sovereigns. We just give that agency over to those whom we elect and place into office.
Right. A lot of people make the error of thinking and stating that the United States was created as a democracy, but that is not correct. In fact, a democracy, when you boil it down to its essence, isn't it mob rule?
Yes. It comes down to that. It comes down to mob rule. And whereas even at the time of the Constitutional Convention, every state that came out of the colonies was a sovereign country, if you will. That's how they were viewed.
Right. Our country was called these United States of America, not the United States of America.
Correct. Yes. And it came into that shift as over time.
Yes. Well, could you also basically summarize exactly how a constitutional republic functions? Obviously, even though we were founded as one, we don't necessarily function as one today, and probably have been drifting away from that for over a century. But if you could tell us basically in summary form about that.
and you're correct, it's more than a century. I think we started drifting away almost within 50 years of the Constitutional Convention. What we've looked at in this respect is that we are independent republics, or that's what the state should be. And as you know, and we talked about before, is that our first constitution were the Articles of Confederation. So what we have, in essence, is that a confederate union of independent nations, there being the states, each having their own constitution, each being guaranteed to work within the concept of a representative republican form of government, became a nation for several different purposes. There were things that were seen as weaknesses within the context of the Articles of Confederation, and when they went to fix those weaknesses, we ended up with a new constitution, thereby what we have now. And that's bringing that together, strengthening some of the areas, and in the case of, in the arguments of the anti-federalist, causing potential problems within that constitution that we're actually seeing happening to us in the present day, especially in the judiciary.
Now, labels can be confusing. You have people identifying themselves with certain labels, and they don't necessarily match up what you think that those labels should mean. Our opinions may be formed by stereotypes or misinformation or a bygone error that has lost its meaning today. But if you could, give us a summary of the major labels that we use today when it comes to political ideology. I bring this up, obviously, because it is inherent to your title, the word conservative. Not all conservatives are constitutionalists, and obviously that means many different things to different people. For instance, just one example might be that you might have somebody who has moral and even, has biblically moral code of ethics. They are against same-sex marriage. They're against abortion and so on. They would view themselves as conservative, but they may unconsciously have an understanding of the strength or power of the government that actually militates against what conservatism once meant. And it usually happens, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that when you have people who have conservative moral values and social views and so on, when they have someone they favored elected into the White House or other places of authority, they want that particular office bearer, the president, for instance. They very often, I'm not saying they always do this, but depending upon the person or group, they very often want to heap upon that person that they helped elect with more power than they should constitutionally possess, and then later on they regret it when someone who is a liberal or a leftist is elected. So, I mean, this can be confusing in regard to these labels, can it be?
Oh, absolutely, and I think, you know, so the essence of the book starts out with a very interesting quote from Sam Adams, and that words do have meaning. And what Sam Adams said here is, how strangely will the tools of a tyrant pervert the plain meaning of words? So to your point is, when we start looking at all the different terms, like conservative, what does that mean today? But what did it mean in the 1800s? What's a liberal? What's a leftist? What are these different things? We try and put things in some kind of parameters that functionally, you know, work within the context of someone's ideology, or to everything that you're saying is what they, where they develop their belief system from. And when we look at it, and some, that's what I'm trying to drive to in the book, is that words have meaning, and when the words have meaning, And when we take and we start looking at that from our original and founder's original intent, we can look back to the history, and that's what I develop in the book, is the history of the word conservative all the way back into its time in England, and when did that start to become used here in America as a term for some political entity. And those are the types of things that we looked at, and one of the things that we try to define is when you're talking about political parties or positioning oneself within that political environment by a term, and you got to go back, and I suggest to everyone listening, look up George Washington's farewell address. And in there, Washington, as well as Sam Adams, as well as a number of Patrick Henry and others, would say, stay away from political parties, because what happens in them is cabals develop. People start developing, to your point, oh boy, I got that guy elected, and guess what? Now I'm going to have that influence on them. I mean, we see that today with the Koch brothers, who have influenced with billions of dollars. People said, oh, they were the evil of the right, but now we're finding out they're people out for themselves. They're libertarians without any moral context. So when we start trying to lay on those labels, it then takes and allows us to skirt around all the different principles and within and become single focused at sometimes. We can take the whole abortion issue, and there are those that become so single-focused within the Christian element on fighting abortion that they forget that to fight it appropriately, we have to look to our lesser magistrates. So what are the principles then in what it is about utilizing from that whole historical perspective? How did John Knox appeal to those lords in what he, in his appellation, did? Right there is an amazing study that can be drawn right back into our historical perspective of redress. That's what it comes down to, and placed then into what did our founders, like Sam Adams, know? What did they bring from that whole Reformation period into those ideas of self-governance? And then using the principles of truth, the biblical principles of governance, develop a nation that we should have had instead of, as you already indicated, that started going sideways, you know, right in the early 1800s.
Yes, and also to further distinguish some of the terms that we use, we may have even brought this up in the beginning of our previous interview. But there are many similarities, it seems, between, and this is ironic, that you have people describing themselves as classically liberal or classic liberals that have a lot more in common with conservatives today than they would with what we might normally think of as liberal, because what we normally think of as liberal today, they are typically leftists. They're not really liberals because they are totalitarian in their mindset. They don't want all voices to have an equal say in the public arena. They want control over everything. They are the new champions of censorship. They want to be the thought police and so on. I mean, it's really not liberalism at all. It's really leftism, as I said. And then you have those that... I think Thomas Sowell is even considered a classical liberal, if I'm not mistaken. But if you could explain the difference between what typically, when people say they're liberal today, and a classical liberal and a conservative.
Sure. The as you well defined already, is that the liberal today, which again we're looking at how that terminology originated from England and then is across the ocean. It didn't carry those definitions with it, but what it did is it actually did a 180 flip. It was like doing the magnetic pole shift, if you will, going across the Atlantic Ocean. were the conservatives in England at the time, and to some extent today, not as much, wanted to preserve things. They wanted to preserve the authority of the king in totality. At some point in time, they then went to a split in the government. We're looking at the king, the parliament, with the lords and the commons all sharing some aspects of that power, whereas the liberals in England were the ones that were looking for how to better utilize the rights of the people, how to take and go back to Magna Carta and work through what is liberty, what are those property rights, what are those ideas of a representative shared form of government. So, and how did that fit into the economics of Adam Smith at the time as all of that was developing? So when we talk about, again, here in America, when we saw that polar shift of terminology, the liberals are quite the opposite, to your point, they're totalitarian. They want the government at all, whereas conservatives in America are the ones that want smaller government by modern terminology and all of the different, I call it, it's almost like a litany, if you will, of all these different terms that we can ascribe to conservatism. But the on our classical liberal is basically a way in the United States to try and define what liberals were in England back in the 1800s, in the late 1700s, 1800s, where we were looking at what was economic liberty, what were we looking at with property rights, where are we looking at with those forms of ideas that would fit into a rule of law established under the constitutionalism. So in many ways, when they have a moral context, I think that the classical liberal is much closer to constitutionalism often than many conservatives are, even though they want to say, they say we're all about the Constitution, yet there's times you just wonder if they look at it from its proper operational perspective and don't go back to what we started the program with. They just go on single focus or reactionary, which we're seeing a lot of, especially in the Republican Congress today. We just see all this reactionary effort instead of looking at what is the constitutional format to which we should be looking at. Slow government down, act according to rule of law, and develop it according to fundamental principles. That takes time, that takes effort, and it's really a lot of work.
And I remember the last time you took a bit of exception with the concept of libertarianism, and it's hard to pinpoint many people, including myself, when it comes to a political agenda or ideology. I consider myself a libertarian conservative or a conservative libertarian, whichever the way you want to look at it. Although I have to quickly tell people that I also am a pro-life libertarian. I believe that since what I always understood libertarianism to be is that the government should be extremely limited, but one of the certain duties of government is to protect the safety and life of the citizens of the nation where you live. And I believe that unborn children are human beings that are deserving of that protection. So I would be adamantly pro-life. I believe that abortion is murder. But I still believe, I seem to be agreeing more and more with my libertarian friends who are of a more conservative, or should I say a clearly Christian version of libertarianism, that the right to life needs to be a primary focus in the realm of politics. But if you could comment on why is it that you frown upon that phrase or even that ideology, libertarian?
Well, I think, it comes to the semantics and terminology, and words have meaning. The derivative libertarian or libertarianism is from libertine, which is what happened in France, where all morality, all essence of God was removed from what happened within the French Revolution, and we had a mess. I think because of my Samuel Adams thinking is that the ideas of liberty have to have that rule of law, have to have a clear understanding of the sovereignty of God. And if we look at what are we as a nation, we're a constitutional republic. So therefore, in my thinking, constitutionalism, so I would call myself a constitutionalist, in that respect, and I throw in the anti-federalist bent because then what we saw is that we saw a change right away from the Constitution splitting off into these parties or these labels. So it all comes down, I think, Chris, to what we began the conversation. Words have meaning. What are the labels that people put to quickly describe one another instead of getting down to the principles? So everything that you're describing yourself as, I would offer to you that you're, in fact, a constitutionalist with that anti-federalist perspective, and even more so than the libertarian. And what you had to put a qualifier on is that the libertarian with a moral determinant, right? You could be that too. So it comes down to what's acceptable in defining yourself today to allow yourself to function within that political environment, and what describes you to your and is workable with those other believers that you interact with. So those are the challenges. And the mix up in the terminology is that we end up with disparity in using terms that someone all of a sudden is recreating just because they're going off and saying, okay, I got this new word I want to use, whatever, instead of taking and saying, no, these are the fundamentals that were given to us. And if we're going to have a solid republic that is established within the context of a rule of law that is built on a framework of a document that isn't changeable except by, Article 5, or where new laws are brought in because we do treaties or we do all those different things. Now, that, to me, better quantifies what we're about. But, oh, geez, you know, I'm a libertarian conservative that, you know, I'm really all about pro-life, but then I'm not sure where my economics fall into all of that.
Yeah, I would think that by definition a libertarian would be fiscally very conservative and believe in very limited government spending, et cetera.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I know the other thing that I have to say, that I am in disagreement with libertarians that I see in the limelight of the media that will be against secure borders and things like that. I think that that is a suicidal libertarians, because for people that love freedom and liberty so much, they are putting those things at risk by letting anybody come in to the nation where you live, because you are really putting the very liberties you cherish at risk. I mean, if we were to have a totally borderless society, we could very well become under Sharia law at some point in the future, and there goes your liberties that you love so much. So, I mean, it just seems to be insane to me to be a... Because that, I think, goes under one of the limited areas where the government is required, is to protect the citizens in our own nation and from behind our borders, whereas... I'm assuming that you would agree that the conservatives that have redefined what that means and have become war hawks and have involved our nation in foreign conflicts where we really don't belong, that would be not only a violation of libertarianism, but wouldn't it be a violation of what our founding fathers conceived as a right form of government in relationship to countries abroad?
Correct. Now, stay out of it. Going back again to Washington's well address, says, you know, stay out of all of those types of conflicts. You know, keep your noses clean of all of that. I think, and what you're describing with the war hawks and all of that, it's very interesting. So, how does a neoconservative fit into that? Where do they come from? And so that's one of the things I talk about. I read a really good book. I can't think of his name right now. I'm not referencing it in mine. The father of neoconservatism in the United States, and he was what we would call a conservative Democrat. And he got so fed up with the Democrats taking and moving to that totalitarian position, moving to socialism, moving to the anarchy that they're all about today, that he actually left the Democrat Party and became that neoconservative, if you will, and brought in those other strong ideas that were part of the Democratic Party for a long period of time, that being very strong on being involved in foreign affairs, you know, almost to the war hawkishness. And so it blended in, if you will, to the point where we had people making those crossovers, but bringing the portions of their ideologies with them.
Are you talking about Ronald? Are you talking about Ronald Reagan by any chance?
No. It wasn't Ronald Reagan. He was a broadcaster for years. He had a program on PBS for years. I can see his face. I just can't think of his name off the top of my head.
We're going to a break right now. If you want to look that up, but that's not essential. But we are going to a break right now.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I want to learn more about the neocons that we hear a lot about. It's funny because sometimes I hear the word neocon coming from the lips of people that other conservatives call neocons. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
I'm seeing and hearing people that have been described as neocons disparagingly calling other people neocons. But we'll go more in depth in that after we return from this break. If anybody would like to join us on the air, and we do have a number of people already waiting to have their questions asked and answered, but if anybody else would like to join them, if you want to get in line, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Don't go away, God willing. We will be right back after these messages from our sponsors. Chris Arnzen, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio here. I want to tell you about a man I have personally known for many years. His name is Dan Buttafuoco. Dan is a personal injury and medical malpractice lawyer, but not the type that typically comes to mind. Dan cares about people and is a theologian himself. Recently, he wrote a book titled Consider the Evidence for the Bible. Ravi Zacharias wrote the foreword. Dan also has a master's degree in theology. Dan handles serious injury and medical malpractice cases in all 50 states. He represents many Christians in serious injury matters all over the country. Dan is an exceptional trial lawyer. He wrote the test for the National Board of Trial Advocacy. And currently his firm has over 100 cases that have settled for $1 million or more, and in approximately 10 different states. In Illinois, his lawyers had the fourth largest settlement in the state's history. In New York, his case involving a paralyzed police officer made the front page of the law journal. If you have a serious personal injury or medical malpractice claim in any state, I recommend that you call Dan. Consultations are free. There is no fee unless you win. Dan Buttafuoco's number is 1-800-669-4878. 1-800-669-4878. Or email me for Dan's contact information at chrisarnzen@gmail.com. That's chrisarnzen@gmail.com.
My name is Steve Lawson, founder and president of One Passion Ministries, as well as teaching fellow for Ligonier Ministries. I serve as professor of preaching and oversee the Doctor of Ministry program at the Master's Seminary in Los Angeles. I would like to recommend the church where one of my preaching students, Andy Woodard, serves as the pastor. It's called New Covenant Church, NYC. They are a Reformed Baptist church that meets in Midtown Manhattan. You can find their service times and location on their website, which is www.ncc.nyc. They believe in a sovereign God who commands all men everywhere to repent and believe the gospel. If you're looking for a church that believes in expository preaching, which is simply biblical preaching, in New York City, I'd like to recommend that you visit New Covenant Church, NYC. Again, their information can be found at www.ncc.nyc. Have a great day.
Hi, I'm Chris Arnzen, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, here to tell you about an exciting offer from World Magazine, my trusted source for news from a Christian perspective. Try World at no charge for 90 days and get a free copy of R.C. Sproul's book, Relationship Between Church and State. I rely on World because I trust the reporting. I gain insight from the analysis, and World provides clarity to the news stories that really matter. I believe you'll also find World to be an invaluable resource to better understand critical topics with a depth that's simply not found in other media outlets. Armed with this coverage, World can help you to be a voice of wisdom in your family and your community. This trial includes bi-weekly issues of World Magazine, on-scene reporting from World Radio, and the fully shareable content of World Digital. Simply visit wmg.org/ironsharpens to get your World trial and Dr. Sproul's book all free. No obligation with no credit card required. Visit World News Group at wmg.org/ironsharpens today.
Hi, I'm Pastor Bill Shishko, inviting you to tune in to A Visit to the Pastor's Study every Saturday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time on WLIE Radio, www.wlie540am.com. We bring biblically faithful pastoral ministry to you, and we invite you to visit the pastor's study by calling in with your questions. Our time will be lively, useful, and I assure you, never dull. Join us this Saturday at 12 noon Eastern Time for A Visit to the Pastor's Study, because everyone needs a pastor.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com, and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
And don't forget to continue to pray for Mike Gadosh, the founder of Solid Ground Christian Books. Mike, as many of you who listen regularly know, is scheduled to have open heart surgery. It is a very serious, very complicated, very delicate open heart surgery that he needs to undergo. And we have an update that the surgery is going to be held, God willing, sooner than expected. According to Mike Gadosh today, he just got a call from his surgeon's office, and they had an opening pop up a week earlier, so he goes in for prep on Thursday, the 23rd of August, and surgery the first thing in the morning on Friday, the 24th of August. So please pray that our great physician, Jesus Christ, would be guiding very steadily and carefully the hands of everyone in that operating room, and that Mike rises up a healthier and stronger man from that hospital bed than he has been in years, and even a stronger and healthier Christian spiritually because of the trial he's been through. So please pray for my dear friend, my very first pastor as a born-again believer, Mike Gaidosh, founder of Solid Ground Christian Books. We are now back with our guest today, Tom Nivolis, and we are talking about his book, Not All Conservatives or Constitutionalists. Our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And please give us your first name, at least your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. Only remain anonymous if your question involves a personal or private matter, such as perhaps you disagree with your own spouse over political issues, or you disagree with your pastor or something like that, and you'd rather not identify yourself. We can understand that. But other than that, please give us your first name, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. And before we go to any listener questions, if you could continue on the thread of neocons.
Yes, absolutely. So I did find it, and for all those that may be receiving a book, it's on page 68. It's Ben Wattenberg. He's the father of the neoconservative movement, a very influential individual, had a program on PBS for a good number of years, and he explains everything that he did in his book called Fighting Words, A Tale of How Liberals Created Neoconservatism. And he speaks right from the heart how it all came about and the fact that they became the strong influencers within the conservative movement, creating such things as the compassionate conservatism and definitely believing, to your point earlier, in interventionalism, whether it was international or domestic. So when we look at where does that come from in the conservative movement, we can attribute it to what the neoconservatives brought. He was either a member of or he was an influential partner within the American Enterprise Institute. So that then goes to the whole idea of which we can spend days on, is talking about think tanks instead of citizens understanding their rightful place in governing. We have turned over how we self-govern and what it meant from a founder's perspective to be participants in government to experts, be those the experts on so-called, I don't call them experts on radio and TV, even though some believe they are, but even the experts in academia or these think tanks and so on and so forth, whereas our founders expected each and every one of us to be experts in what it meant to be self-governing individuals within a constitutional republic. So that's what Ben Wattenberg, and he was the father of neoconservatism, and that's what they did. They brought in a lot of these, what you termed earlier, leftists, even some socialist ideas into the conservative movement. They're globalist in many ways, so what we see at, so let's talk about Paul Ryan. Is Paul Ryan a constitutional conservative, or is he a neoconservative because he has such globalist influence and he has the support of those that are interventionist and want open borders? Or, you know, even though we just talked about the Koch brothers being libertarians for a long period of time, they termed themselves as neoconservatives. So, again, we're looking at the semantics, word usage, when someone wants to define themselves as something to either get someone else to go in the direction they want to go, or because they want to promote their ideology in a way that is, I call it somewhat shrouded from the intents that what they may have. So what are the fundamental principles of constitutionalism versus what these other terms, you know, are out
Well, if you could, before we go to any of our listener questions, give a summary of exactly the kind of conservatism that disturbs you, that you have apprehensions over, to put it mildly, perhaps, that you believe are perhaps conservative in name, but they are not truly constitutionalist. Tell us about this phenomenon that you were talking about specifically.
Well, it goes to some of that, where we have the outside influences of globalism. We look at what are some of those economic perspectives that are taking and re-enslaving us as a nation by taking and going back to even what the conservatives in Europe wanted, to go back to a form of feudalism, if you will, but a modern form of feudalism. That's a new idea that people, it's not a new idea, but it's what people have been writing about on modern feudalism, based on seeing, once again, those who have the wealth or power to take and then influence within those that are in a place of political authority, that we made an assumption that they would do something, and they don't do it according to what we believe the American DNA and principles are. So we look at economics, we look at world interventionism, we look at the domestic policies that you talked about earlier. It makes common sense, but it's a constitutionally correct that we're a sovereign nation. We should retain that sovereignty. Our religious liberties should have no question within them, and yet we see conservatives that fight us on every idea that is fundamental to founders' intent. And that's where I really start to break away and look at those that call themselves conservative. What does it mean to look, and what have they looked at relative to founders' intent and the Constitution as the founders intended it to be? I've worked with a lot of different political people, some people that are in Congress today, that when I ask them very pointedly to go through their clear understanding of how the Constitution functions, they look at you dumbfounded. Well, no, this is how we operate based on what the party wants, or this is how we operate based on what the conservative ideas are. And then when you ask them to quantify what those conservative ideas are, well, it's all on economics. Well, so there's the disparity and not consistency within the definition of terms. I go back, and I think one of the ones where I try and help people get some clarity is that with what Russell Kirk kind of put together, and he was doing some work, this was back in the 50s, and he got together even with William F. Buckley Jr., and actually came up with about 10 fundamental principles of what a conservative should be. And within the context of those 10 principles, I think that if all those that call themselves conservatives would look at that even and say, yes, that's what I'm going to live by consistently, I think we'd see a much different political environment, and the way policy is driven, way laws are written, and how even the judicial system would function. So that's where my burn really comes, and that's what my journey was. What the heck does it mean to be a conservative? What am I? Who am I? And how does it fit into founders' original intent for us to be a self-governing people within the context of this constitutional republic?
Yeah, I even have friends that are so disgusted with the state of the government in the United States today that they don't, even though you might call them conservatives because of the fact that they adhere to biblical morality and believe in a limited government, but they are so disgusted with the state of politics in the United States that they don't want to call themselves conservatives because they will say, perhaps partially tongue-in-cheek, there's nothing left to conserve.
There's a number of people that are like that. I know some people that are expats because they got so fed up.
Right.
And I'm going, well, that doesn't help anything. You know, we're supposed to be in here to for the long haul, and you know, we're supposed to fight the tyrannies. We're supposed to bring those, especially as Christians. You know, I mean, that's why, as much as there's some things that, you know, I look at old Charles Finney and I sit there and go, where'd he go south? There's several things that he said in his December 1873 article, where he talked about the pulpit is responsible, and I'm sure you're familiar with that whole article. But he, you know, he goes, wait a minute, if you're going to criticize Puritanism, if you're going to look at that, you better look at it in its whole context. And so we see that even in the preaching across many, 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 many churches in America, is that, you know, just don't spiritualize it. What does it mean for the sovereignty of God to be extensible into everything, and especially in America, where we have that determination of self-governance, is to be participants in what that means from our biblical perspective.
All right, let's start taking some of our listener questions. I rarely give people's full names, but since this is a pastor that I know, and I'd like to give a plug to his church, because one of the key reasons that I want Iron Sharpens Iron Radio to exist is to be a friend of the local church when the local church is a biblically faithful and solid church. So Pastor Bruce Bennett has a question, and he is the pastor of the Word of Truth Church in Farmingville, Long Island, New York. And his website, by the way, is wotchurch.com, wotchurch.com, which stands for Word of Truth Church. But Pastor Bennett says, to what extent did framers of the Constitution want biblical morality to guide federal and state laws?
Well, the framers themselves, and this again goes to what I think I mentioned in the last time that we were on the program, is the difference between the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist. It wasn't fully within the framing. It was assumptive, especially by those that became the Federalists, that pastors would do their job. And as John Adams and others said, is that this Constitution is only for a moral and virtuous people. And the expectation was, is that the churches would continue to produce moral and virtuous people so that we would have moral and virtuous leaders that then would be elected into government. So the sad part is that Madison's influence by the Scottish Enlightenment kind of took that directive out, if you will, but made it assumptive that we would have a moral and virtuous people that would be able to self-govern. Whereas the Anti-Federalists, they were so clear on it and going, no, I'm sorry, human nature is what it is. Oh, it's more than human nature. Man is sinful, and by virtue of that, how can we count on this Constitution without the amendments in particular to be a good covenant with the people, if you will, without knowing that there's going to be problems from that moral perspective, and that maybe churches won't do their job. So we better have something that's going to be established at least at a minimum to take and guarantee some of our rights, and that's therefore, as you know in history, how then why they pushed, especially in the states conventions, for the Bill of Rights to be amended into the Constitution. But the founders, I mean the framers themselves, weren't pushing that biblical perspective. There's a lot in there from a covenantal concept, but as we look at it, it was assumptive that the churches would do and prepare the carried this form of government into full operation.
Well, thank you, Pastor Bruce. Please give us your full mailing address in Farmingville, Long Island, so that we can ship you a copy of Not All Conservatives or Constitutionalists by our guest today, Thomas Nivolis. And this will be shipped out to you by CVBBS.com, Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service. And by the way, Brandon in Franklinton, North Carolina, I'm afraid our guest, if you've been listening, has taken the wind out of your sails because he already answered your question. So Brandon basically asked, John Adams is quoted as saying something similar to our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to govern any to the government of any other. Could you ask Mr. Wallace to elaborate on what Adams means here, and does he agree with this statement? Does this tie into the theme of his book in any way? You've really already answered all of those questions, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, Brandon, if you want to ask another question, send that in during the break. We are going to our midway break right now. This is the longer than normal break because Grace Life Radio, 90.1 FM in Lake City, Florida, requires of us a longer break because they air their own commercials and public service announcements. So please take this time not only to write down questions for our guest, Thomas Nivolis, on the Constitution, but also please write down the information provided by our advertisers so that you can patronize them and help keep Iron Sharpens Iron Radio on the air by doing so, because we rely upon our advertisers' sponsorship dollars. So don't go away. We'll be right back after this break with Tom Nivolis, and our email address is chrisarnson@gmail.com, chrisarnson@gmail.com.
Tired of box store Christianity, of doing church in a warehouse with all the trappings of a rock concert? Do you long for a more traditional and reverent style of worship? And how about the preaching? Perhaps you've begun to think that in-depth biblical exposition has vanished from Long Island. Well, there's good news. Wading River Baptist Church exists to provide believers with a meaningful and reverent worship experience, featuring the systematic exposition of God's Word. And this loving congregation looks forward to meeting you. Call them at 631-929-3512 for service times, 631-929-3512, or check out their website at wrbc.us. That's wrbc.us.
I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. The New American Standard Bible is perfect for daily reading or in-depth study. Used by pastors, scholars, and everyday readers, the NASB is widely embraced and trusted as a literal and readable Bible translation. The NASB offers clarity and readability while maintaining high accuracy to the original languages, which the NASB is known for. The NASB is available in many editions, like a topical reference Bible. Researched and prepared by biblical scholars devoted to accuracy, the new topical reference Bible includes contemporary topics relevant to today's issues. From compact to giant print Bibles, find an NASB that fits your needs very affordably at nasbible.com. Whichever edition you choose, trust, discover, and enjoy the NASB for yourself today. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com.
One sure way all Iron Sharpens Iron Radio listeners can help keep my show on the air is to support my advertisers. I know you all use batteries every day, so I'm urging you all from now on to exclusively use BatteryDepot.com for all your battery needs. At BatteryDepot.com, they're changing the status quo. They're flipping the script. They're sticking it to the man. In other words, they'd like to change the battery industry for good by providing an extensive inventory of top-of-the-line batteries that are uniformly new, dependable, and affordable. Ordering from BatteryDepot.com ensures you'll always get fresh out-of-the-box batteries you can count on to work properly at competitive prices. Whether you need batteries for cordless phones, cell phones, radios, PCs, laptops, tablets, baby monitors, hearing aids, smoke detectors, credit card readers, digital cameras, electronic cigarettes, GPSs, MP3 players, watches, or nearly anything else you own that needs batteries, go to BatteryDepot.com. Next day shipping available. All products protected by 30-day guarantees and 6-month warranties. Call 866-403-3768. That's 866-403-3768. Or go to BatteryDepot.com.
That's BatteryDepot.com.
Every day at thousands of community centers, high schools, middle schools, juvenile institutions, coffee shops, and local hangouts, Long Island Youth for Christ staff and volunteers meet with young people who need Jesus. We are rural and urban, and we are always about the message of Jesus. Our mission is to have a noticeable spiritual impact on Long Island, New York, by engaging young people in the lifelong journey of following Christ. Long Island Youth for Christ has been a stalwart bedrock ministry since 1959. We have a world-class staff and a proven track record of bringing consistent love and encouragement to youths in need all over the country and around the world. Help honor our history by becoming a part of our future. Volunteer, donate, pray, or all of the above. For details, call Long Island Youth for Christ at 631-385-8333. That's 631-385-8333. Or visit liyfc.org. That's liyfc.org.
Iron Sharpens Iron Radio is sponsored by Harvey Cedars, a year-round Bible conference and retreat center nestled on the Jersey Shore. Harvey Cedars offers a wide range of accommodations to suit groups up to 400. For generations, Christians have enjoyed gathering and growing at Harvey Cedars. Each year, thousands of high school and college students come and learn more about God's Word. An additional 9,000 come annually to Harvey Cedars as families, couples, singles, men, women, pastors, seniors, and missionaries. 90 miles from New York City, 70 miles from Philly, and 95 miles from Wilmington, and easily accessible, scores of notable Christian groups frequently plan conferences at Harvey Cedars, like the Navigators, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, Campus Crusade, and the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. Find Harvey Cedars on Facebook or at hcbible.org, hcbible.org. Call 609-494-5689, 609-494-5689. Harvey Cedars, where Christ finds people and changes lives.
My name is Steve Lawson, founder and president of One Passion Ministries, as well as teaching fellow for Ligonier Ministries. I serve as professor of preaching and oversee the Doctor of Ministry program at the Master's Seminary in Los Angeles. I would like to recommend the church where one of my preaching students, Andy Woodard, serves as the pastor. It's called New Covenant Church, NYC. They are a Reformed Baptist church that meets in Midtown Manhattan. You can find their service times and location on their website, which is www.ncc.nyc. They believe in a sovereign God who commands all men everywhere to repent and believe the gospel. If you're looking for a church that believes in expository preaching, which is simply biblical preaching, in New York City, I'd like to recommend that you visit New Covenant Church, NYC. Again, their information can be found at www.ncc.nyc. Have a great day.
Chris Arnson, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio here. I want to tell you about a man I have personally known for many years. His name is Dan Buttafuoco. Dan is a personal injury and medical malpractice lawyer, but not the type that typically comes to mind. Dan cares about people and is a theologian himself. Recently, he wrote a book titled Consider the Evidence for the Bible. Ravi Zacharias wrote the foreword. Dan also has a master's degree in theology. Dan handles serious injury and medical malpractice cases in all 50 states. He represents many Christians in serious injury matters all over the country. Dan is an exceptional trial lawyer. He wrote the test for the National Board of Trial Advocacy. And currently his firm has over 100 cases that have settled for $1 million or more, and in approximately 10 different states. In Illinois,
His lawyers had the fourth largest settlement in the state's history. In New York, his case involving a paralyzed police officer made the front page of the Law Journal. If you have a serious personal injury or medical malpractice claim in any state, I recommend that you call Dan. Consultations are free. There is no fee unless you win. Dan Buttafuoco's number is 1-800-669-4878. 1-800-669-4878. Or email me for Dan's contact information at chrisarnzen@gmail.com. That's chrisarnzen@gmail.com.
Thrivin Financial is not your typical financial services provider. As a membership organization, we help Christians be wise with money and live generously every day. And for the fourth year in a row, we were named one of the world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute, a leading international think tank dedicated to the creation, advancement, and sharing of best practices in business ethics. Contact me, Mike Gallagher, financial consultant, at 717-254-6433. Again, 717-254-6433 to learn more about the Thrivent Difference.
Faith, finances, and generosity. That's the Thrivent story.
We were made to thrive.
Iron Sharpens Iron welcomes Solid Rock Remodeling to our family of sponsors. Serving South Central Pennsylvania, Solid Rock Remodeling is focused on discovering, understanding, and exceeding your expectations. They deliver personalized project solutions with exceptional results. Solid Rock Remodeling offers a full range of home renovations, including kitchen and bath remodeling, decks, porches, windows and doors, roof and siding, and more. For a clear, detailed professional estimate, call this trustworthy team of problem solvers who provide superior results that stand the test of time. Call Solid Rock Remodeling at 717-697-1981, 717-697-1981, or visit solidrockremodeling.com. That's solidrockremodeling.com. Solid Rock Remodeling, bringing new life to your home.
Hi, I'm Buzz Taylor, frequent co-host with Chris Arnson on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. I would like to introduce you to my good friends Todd and Patty Jennings at CVBBS, which stands for Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service. Todd and Patty specialize in supplying Reformed and Puritan books and Bibles at discount prices that make them affordable to everyone. Since 1987, the family-owned and operated book service has sought to bring you the best available Christian books and Bibles at the best possible prices. Unlike other book sites, they make no effort to provide every book that is available because, frankly, much of what is being printed is not worth your time. That means you can get to the good stuff faster. It also means that you don't have to worry about being assaulted by the pornographic, heretical, and otherwise faith-insulting material promoted by the secular book vendors. Their website is cvbbs.com. Browse the pages at ease, shop at your leisure, and purchase with confidence as Todd and Patty work in service to you, the church, and to Christ. That's Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service at cvbbs.com. That's cvbbs.com. Let Todd and Patty know that you heard about them on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
And you can also call cvbbs.com between 10 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. That's 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, at 800-656-0231, 800-656-0231. And make sure you mention that you heard about them from Chris Arnson and Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. If you do so, and you order a minimum of $50 worth of merchandise, you will get free of charge Wayne Mack's book, Anger and Stress Management, God's Way. That's a publication of P&R Publishing, Presbyterian and Reform Publishing. You'll get that free of charge. You'll also receive free of charge your shipping on your order of $50 or more if you order at 800-656-0231 and mention Chris Arnson of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. And you could also obviously order online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year at cvbbs.com, cvbbs.com. Before I return to our guest, Tom Navolas, we just have a couple of announcements of special events. The Quakertown Conference on Reformed Theology is being held November 9th and the 10th at the Grace Bible Fellowship Church in Quakertown, Pennsylvania, and the speakers include David Garner, Ray Ortland, Richard Phillips, Timothy Gibson, and Carlton Wynn. The theme is The Glory of the Cross. I will be there, God willing, manning an Iron Sharpens Iron exhibitor's booth if you would like to register for this conference, November 9th and the 10th in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. Go to alliancenet.org, alliancenet.org. Then coming up in January, my favorite of all of the conferences that I have been where I've been manning an exhibitor's booth. This will be my third year in a row. I'm so excited about it. The G3 Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. More specifically, it will be held at the Georgia International Convention Center in College Park, Georgia, a suburb of Atlanta. This year, the theme, or should I say this January, the theme is The Mission of God, A Biblical Understanding of Missions. It's going to be held from Thursday, January 17th through Saturday, January 19th. There is a special Spanish-speaking conference on Wednesday, January 16th, so tell your Spanish-speaking and bilingual friends that they may want to attend that one as well. That's Wednesday, January 16th. But the English-speaking conference from the 17th through the 19th has an enormous lineup of speakers, as they always do. This is a phenomenal conference and probably has the longest speaking roster that I have ever seen or ever heard preach at a Bible conference before. And they are cream-of-the-crop speakers, I can assure you. I hope that you join me there and you can experience some of these speakers. Some of you may be even experiencing them for the very first time. But these speakers include John Piper, Stephen Lawson, whose voice you just heard in the ad for New Covenant Church NYC, our new sponsor, Vodi Balcom, Conrad Mbewe, the pastor of Kabwata Baptist Church in Lusaka, Zambia, Africa, my favorite preacher of all, Tim Challies, Phil Johnson, who is the executive director of John MacArthur's ministry, Grace to You, Josh Bice, the founder of the G3 Conference, Todd Friel of Wretched TV and Wretched Radio, who was our guest yesterday on Iron Sharpens Iron, Stephen J. Nichols, who is the president of Reformation Bible College, the college founded by R.C. Sproul and Ligonier Ministries, and many more are on that lineup. If you would like to register, go to g3conference.com, g3conference.com, and you can register not only to be an attendee, but you can register to have your own exhibitor's booth there, as I will have, God willing, and they're expecting between 4,000 and 5,000 people there. So I highly urge you to register for an exhibitor's booth at the G3 Conference. That's g3conference.com, g3conference.com. Last but not least, if you love this show, you don't want it to disappear, you look forward to it every day, you share the free MP3s with family, friends, and loved ones, please donate to us as much as you can and as often as you can so that we can remain on the air. Go to g3conference.com. Don't go to g3conference.com for that. Go to ironsharpensironradio.com. ironsharpensironradio.com. Click support, then click to donate now. When you click to donate now at ironsharpensironradio.com, you will be able to immediately, instantly donate by credit or debit card. If you want to donate the old-fashioned way via snail mail, an address will also appear where you can mail a check made payable to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Please never, ever siphon money away from your regular giving to your local church where you are a member. In order to give to Iron Sharpens Iron. And please, if you are not a member of a local Bible-believing church, remember you are living in disobedience to God if you're not prayerfully looking for one. I can help you find you. I can help you find one, I should say. I can help you find a faithful church near you if you send me an email to chrisarnson@gmail.com and put in the subject line, I need to find a church or something similar. I will help you find a church. I already have helped many listeners in this audience find good churches near them. But please never siphon money away from a good church that you're giving to in order to give to us. Never put your family in financial jeopardy by giving to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Providing for your church and your family are two commands of God. Providing for this show is not a command of God. But if you are financially blessed above and beyond your ability to obey those two commands, and you love this show and you don't want it to go away, please go to ironsharpensironradio.com, click support, then click to donate now. If you want to advertise with us, just send me an email to chrisarnson@gmail.com, chrisarnson@gmail.com, and put advertising in the subject line. No matter what it is you want to advertise, as long as it is compatible with what we believe here, you don't have to believe exactly as I do, but you can't be promoting something that militates against what I believe, then please send us an email, and we'd love to help you launch an ad campaign here on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, because we surely could use the advertising dollars. That's also the email address that you can send a question for our guest, Tom Navolas. It's chrisarnson@gmail.com, chrisarnson@gmail.com. And, Tom, we have a number of listeners here waiting for their questions to be asked and answered. We have Joey in Clifton, New Jersey. Joey in Clifton, New Jersey says, I am wondering if you can comment on how, in personal discussion, we can rightly draw some lines in the sand in terms of which political camps are simply not consistent with biblical Christianity. For example, although we should acknowledge the possibility of a counterexample, I believe we can say that the modern United States Democratic Party should generally not be supported by Christians simply because they almost universally stand for moral principles such as abortion, same-sex marriage, that are contrary to Scripture and the practice of faithful Christianity. I am wondering, do you openly and clearly rule out certain parties and affiliations in the way I just stated, or do you approach communication differently? In your answer, assume this is not simply party labeling. Assume that you are able to discuss the principles you stand for and why before telling them what party or affiliation may be inappropriate. Interesting question, but you may, once in a blue moon, I'm not saying this would be a common thing, but you may wind up having an election, especially a local election, but it might be even a presidential election, where you have a Democrat who is pro-life running against a Republican who might be conservative in many ways, but is pro-choice. I mean, those things do happen. Governor George Pataki was a pro-abortionist. In fact, I don't know if he's changed his opinion. I haven't heard that he changed his opinion, but our president's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, he was infamously pro-abortion when running for mayor and while serving as mayor. He was in favor of all kinds of gay rights. This was prior, I believe, to the same-sex marriage issue coming about. But there are a lot of people who are Republicans and even would call themselves conservatives who could care less about a baby being ripped apart in its mother's womb. So it's not as easy as one might think. But if you could respond directly to our listener, Joe in Clifton, New Jersey.
Boy, Joe's so kind in the way that he posed all of that question. There's times I'm so direct that, you know, it really gets people's hair on end because you're never going to have a decent conversation with them anyway. So I just flat out say the Democrats are not anything that Christians should be associated to as well. There's days my wife just kind of turns around and walks away because my bluntness will, you know, obviously stop the conversation because those people don't want a conversation anyway because of their beliefs being so far off in that direction. But I want to continue answering that question in a moment because we had a very true example of that in our county's primary where we had a person that left the Democrat Party and joined the Republican Party for a sole purpose of taking and defeating a sitting county commissioner. And I'll get onto that story in a moment, but one of the things that I think is apropos to all of that is a quote that I have in the book from Samuel Adams, where he talks about the neither the wisest constitution nor the wisest laws will secure the liberty and happiness of the people whose manners are universally corrupt. Then he goes on to talk about that, you know, if you're going to really trust somebody when they're talking about liberty, then where are they in relative to promoting its true virtue? And then talking about power and influences, how is that extended? And then he talks about that a man shouldn't suffer anybody going into an office of power who is not wise and a virtuous man. And here's something very, very interesting, which we hear all the time and kind of goes to that point right there. We must not conclude merely upon a man's haranguing upon liberty and using the charming sound that he is fit to be trusted with the liberties of his country. It is not unfrequent to hear men declaim loudly upon liberty who, if we may judge by their whole tenor of their actions, means nothing else by it but their own liberty to oppress without control or restraint of laws all who are poorer or weaker than themselves. That becomes very interesting. And he wrote that in 1748. And, you know, just these words of wisdom, and it comes to that whole point of determining those who you're going to elect that have that moral and virtuous perspective. And when you're talking about how do we function within the government, nothing's new when it comes to these contentions around morality, virtue, good judgment, wisdom, all of that which we want in those people that are going to represent us. And it comes to the discussion that I have, especially with Christians, is that, you know, first off, don't complain if you're not involved. I'd say that with anybody. Because, well, we're not going to do this, or we're not going to do that, or we're not even going to vote, or I've heard pastors not even, you know, bring anything up about elections forthcoming and go vote your conscience. So what's that? That's where that starts. So when I have a conversation with someone about, and I never bring up where I stand politically except from a constitutional basis. What are those fundamental principles? And biblically, where do those come into play when you understand that the whole essence of everything that we have been involved in I look again always back to Sam Adams, because his one of his monikers being the last Puritan, he lived by his biblical perspective, is that where do you look at that person and where are they in their faith journey and how do they live that faith journey out based on understanding that sovereignty of the living God. And then when you're looking at people that are going into bureaucracy as well as into the political arena itself, is asking where is it that the expectation, especially from a reform point of view, is that they are supposed to be looking to the sovereign over them. And if they're not doing that, then are they really going to be the wisest person that's going to be there? And then I find it my responsibility to help educate them into at least the fundamentals and principles of founders' original intent. And through that, I hope and always pray that I can introduce them to that true understanding that if they're going to be a political leader, they have to do it as that representative of not just we the people, but when they're making those types of decisions, as a representative of the sovereign living God. So that may be a lot of words. Maybe my simple answer was the one Joe preferred.
Now, obviously, you, from your answer, you don't think that a Christian could be attached to the Democratic Party in any way, shape, or form, or the Democrat Party. But that doesn't mean necessarily that the Republican Party is always the answer, because as I just said, there are quite a number of Republicans who might be fiscally conservative, or they may be wearing the name conservative for some particular agenda, but they don't care at all about the life of the unborn. They don't care at all about sexual morality, biblical morality. In fact, once again, Rudy Giuliani, not only was he a pro-abortionist when he was running and serving as mayor of New York City, but he also marched in the gay rights parade. He, I'm assuming, unknowingly, when he was marching in the gay rights parade, was marching right next to the NAMBLA float, the North American Man Love Boy, whatever the heck it's called, the pedophile float. So, in fact, even recently, it was interesting how Rudy Giuliani phrased it when he was asked about some female comedian's disgusting and satanic jokes about abortion. It was interesting to hear Rudy Giuliani's response. He said, oh, that's so horrible. How could you joke about the massacre of all those embryos? He actually used the word embryos and massacre in the same term, rather than children or unborn children. I'm not necessarily saying that he hasn't changed, but to me that was a very, that was a softened way of reacting to it, if you ask me.
I agree with, I'm 100% with you, and I usually call a good portion of those people that you're talking about repudicants, because they repudiate everything that is fundamentally true, including you and I. So if you got them in other conversations, you even hear those types of... I've had sidebar conversations with some folks that are within the establishment Republican Party, if you will, and when they... This gets into what I talked about in the book. Are you locked into party thought? Are you conservative? You know, why even bother with the Constitution? We have conservatism. Really? Who needs a constitution if you have that, right? No, that's not what it is.
Wow.
But that gets to your point, and that's part of the argument, is that people are functioning within all of these ideologies, but then it gets to what are we doing, where have we, and this goes outside the book, this goes into the larger context of what I do on my radio program as well. Samuel Adams Returns the Anti-Federalist got it right, is from that perspective, is that if we're believers, why have we walked away from the public square? Why are we not, within the context of our churches, taking and raising up those leaders with all of what we have in our biblical points of view, and because we have the absolute right and responsibility within this constitutional republic to participate, we're not in that public square, not just as political leaders, but in bureaucracies as well as in education. We've turned that all over to the spiritual enemy. So when we talk about the Rudy Giulianis, when we talk about all of these other peoples in political parties, no matter what their label is, as a conservative Democrat, some of the other conservative terminology for a Reagan Democrat or whatever they are, or, you know, conservatives, wait a minute. What have we done as believers by taking and walking away from that public square? And we hear it many, many pulpits, you know, not saying that the pulpit should be the public square, but when I read and have studied those sermons from our foundation, they addressed it. They addressed what liberty is in Jesus Christ and how that transcends then into the liberties of a free people and a free nation that, number one, self-govern because of how God functions within us as a renewed man and woman, and then how we're supposed to be for the good of society around us, especially within the nation that we've been blessed to be born within.
I just have to
get... That becomes a greater discussion.
Amen. Well, I wanted to just give a little plug to a documentary that you can see online for free when it comes to abortion. MAFA 21, that's M as in Michael, A-A, F as in Frank, A, 21. MAFA is a Swahili word meaning massacre. And it is a pro-life documentary and really revealing the origins of Planned Parenthood and so on, how it was purely based on racism, Margaret Sanger's desire to rid the nation, if not the world, of black people, primarily, and other minorities, through forced sterilization and abortion. And it's an eye-opening documentary. It also shows how both the Republican and Democrat Party had their roles in keeping infanticide alive in this country. So it's a nonpartisan, politically nonpartisan documentary that shows that the guilty parties are on both sides of the aisle when it comes to the murder of the unborn.
Absolutely. Now, I think, Chris, that's, you know, what you're pointing out just with that alone is what I always talk about the founders were, and the framers, the founders being those prior to the Constitutional Convention, the framers obviously being those that participated in putting the Constitution of 87 together. But with the majority of them, and especially those that were the profound speakers within that, that being Sam Adams, that being Patrick Henry, George Washington and such, said, stay away from party spirit. You know, that when we talk about, you know, out of Ephesians, that this is a spiritual warfare, party spirit is part of that warfare. And when people get hung up on a political party, they're missing the point of where it drives to what Sam Adams was trying to talk about, that essence of liberty. And where does that come from, and how is that maintained within a civil society? And those are the types of things that the only way it can be, you know, going back to the earlier question about John Adams' quote around morality and virtue. If we're not promoting that and giving the life message of how that becomes extensible from our biblical worldview, boy, oh boy, there is no civil society.
Amen. We've got to go our final break right now, and I'm asking that all of you waiting online to have your questions asked be patient, but we'll get to as many of you as we can before we go off the air. But if you want to get in line to try to squeeze in, let's see if we can get your question at chrisarnson@gmail.com. chrisarnson@gmail.com. Don't go away, God willing. We'll be right back after these final messages from our sponsors.
Paul wrote to the church at Galatia, "For am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ." Hi, I'm Mark Lukens, pastor of Providence Baptist Church. We are a Reformed Baptist church, and we hold to the London Baptist Confession of Faith of 1689. We are in Norfolk, Massachusetts. We strive to reflect Paul's mindset to be much more concerned with how God views what we say and what we do than how men view these things. That's not the best recipe for popularity, but since that wasn't the apostles' priority, it must not be ours either. We believe, by God's grace, that we are called to demonstrate love and compassion to our fellow man, and to be vessels of Christ's mercy to a lost and hurting community around us, and to build up the body of Christ in truth and love. If you live near Norfolk, Massachusetts, or plan to visit our area, please come and join us for worship and fellowship. You can call us at 508-528-5750, that's 508-528-5750, or go to our website to email us, listen to past sermons, worship songs, or watch our TV program entitled Resting in Grace. You can find us at Providence Baptist Church, ma.org, that's Providence Baptist Church, ma.org, or even on sermonaudio.com. Providence Baptist Church is delighted to sponsor Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Have you been blessed by Iron Sharpens Iron Radio? We remain on the air because of our faithful sponsors and because of listeners like you. There are four ways you can help. first. Do you know potential sponsors who may wish to advertise their goods or services on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio? Second, whenever possible, purchase the products or use the services that our sponsors advertise. And then let them know that you heard about them on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Thirdly, you can also donate to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio by going to our website at ironsharpensironradio.com and click support at the top of the page. But most importantly, keep Iron Sharpens Iron Radio in your prayers. We hope that Iron Sharpens Iron Radio blesses you for many years to come.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Chef Exclusive Catering is in South Central Pennsylvania. Chef Exclusive's goal is to provide a dining experience that is sure to please any palate. Chef Damian White of Chef Exclusive is a graduate of the renowned Johnson & Wales University with a degree in culinary arts and applied science. Chef Exclusive Catering's event center is newly designed with elegance and style and is available for small office gatherings, bridal showers, engagement parties, and rehearsal dinners. Critics and guests alike acknowledge Chef Exclusive's commitment to exceeding even the highest expectations. I know of their quality firsthand since Chef Exclusive catered my most recent Iron Sharpens Iron Radio Pastor's Luncheon. For details, call 717-388-3000. That's 717-388-3000. Or visit chefexclusive.com. That's chefexclusive.com.
My name is Steve Lawson, founder and president of One Passion Ministries, as well as teaching fellow for Ligonier Ministries. I serve as professor of preaching and oversee the Doctor of Ministry program at the Master's Seminary in Los Angeles. I would like to recommend the church where one of my preaching students, Andy Woodard, serves as the pastor. It's called New Covenant Church, NYC. They are a Reformed Baptist church that meets in Midtown Manhattan. You can find their service times and location on their website, which is www.ncc.nyc. They believe in a sovereign God who commands all men everywhere to repent and believe the gospel. If you're looking for a church that believes in expository preaching, which is simply biblical preaching, in New York City, I'd like to recommend that you visit New Covenant Church, NYC. Again, their information can be found at www.ncc.nyc. Have a great day.
Hi, I'm Pastor Bill Shishko, inviting you to tune in to A Visit to the Pastor's Study every Saturday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time on WLIE Radio, www.wlie540am.com. We bring biblically faithful pastoral ministry to you, and we invite you to visit the pastor's study by calling in with your questions. Our time will be lively, useful, and I assure you, never dull. Join us this Saturday at 12 noon Eastern Time for a visit to the pastor's study, because everyone needs a pastor.
Welcome back. This is Chris Orange, and if you just tune us in... Oh, my guest got cut off. I don't know how that happened. Hopefully he will call back. While we are waiting for him to call back, I'm just going to go to one more commercial break, and hopefully Tom Navolis will be joining us again, because there's a lot of people waiting to have their questions asked. Tom, if you're listening, please call back, and we will get to you as soon as you return to the airwaves with us. Don't go away, folks. We're going to go to one final station break, And hopefully Tom Nivolis will be waiting for us.
Chris Arnson, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio here. I want to tell you about a man I have personally known for many years. His name is Dan Buttafuoco. Dan is a personal injury and medical malpractice lawyer, but not the type that typically comes to mind. Dan cares about people and is a theologian himself. Recently, he wrote a book titled Consider the Evidence for the Bible. Ravi Zacharias wrote the foreword. Dan also has a master's degree in theology. Dan handles serious injury and medical malpractice cases in all 50 states. He represents many Christians in serious injury matters all over the country. Dan is an exceptional trial lawyer. He wrote the test for the National Board of Trial Advocacy. And currently his firm has over 100 cases that have settled for $1 million or more, and in approximately 10 different states. In Illinois, his lawyers had the fourth largest settlement in the state's history. In New York, his case involving a paralyzed police officer made the front page of the Law Journal. If you have a serious personal injury or medical malpractice claim in any state, I recommend that you call Dan. Consultations are free. There is no fee unless you win. Dan Buttafuoco's number is 1-800-669-4878. 1-800-669-4878. Or email me for Dan's contact information at chrisarnson@gmail.com. That's chrisarnson@gmail.com.
Welcome back, and I believe that we have Tom Nivolis back on the phone. Tom?
We are.
Yeah. I don't know what happened, but anyway, the main thing is you're back. We have Michael in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, who asks, in the early 1980s, I read the Constitution was originally a Trinitarian document that could not be agreed on. I do not know the source and have been unable to find it. Any truth to this?
I have not read that. It'd be interesting to see if he does find a source. I'd like to see that. The Constitution came out of Madison developing and his studies after the Maryland conference that was the previous year. And as we know, and now we can go back to Madison's notes and Yates' notes, I don't see a Trinitarian focus in there. I see it as trying to find the best way to bring all of the ideas of governance together with the fundamentals. Again, it goes back to the presumption, though, that when we see that break of, again, political parties forming almost immediately between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, taking sides on how that should be interpreted and played out, I think then we can look at where it comes to the real heart source of how we should govern from our biblical perspective. But I've never read anything specific to that.
Okay, well, Michael, you've won a free copy of Not All Conservatives Are Constitutionalists. And by the way, I don't know if I mentioned it to Joe in Clifton, New Jersey. You also won a copy of the book. So please make sure we have your mailing address, both of you, so that cvbbs.com can ship those books out to you. We have Casey, originally from Davao or Davao City in the Philippines, now living in Kannapolis, North Carolina. And Casey asks, how can we make more American pastors more educated on political matters and Christian worldview in order for them to train and teach their people? As the pastor goes, so goes the church, Casey. That's an interesting question because we do have a divide amongst even the most conservative of churches as to how much political input our churches as an institution should have, not talking about individual Christians, but John MacArthur, one of my modern-day heroes, has very strict ideas on the separation of political agenda and the gospel of Jesus Christ. And you have all kinds of views in between. You have churches that have presidential, or should I say political candidates candidating from their own pulpits and so on. So what is your view on this? How can we make more American pastors more educated on political matters and Christian worldview, which I think can be a separate issue, Christian worldview, in order for them to train and teach their people?
No, I really appreciate that, and I appreciate a lot of the work that Sproul did and a number of others. I think there was a fantastic balance there. I think there are the places to get that Christian worldview point. The gospel has absolutely where... Okay, simple answer. Maybe once a quarter a pastor could read, which will never happen because a lot of those sermons are longer, or a portion of one of the sermons that were preached during the founding era. That would be interesting if you get someone to do that. Or my answer is, because I know that sense here in Northeast Ohio takes that position that you just said, and my retort is that find trusted people, vetted people within a congregation that can be made available. You don't have to preach it from the pulpit. You can take and have that understanding and be willing to, and I think that's where it goes, is that, okay, if you want to maintain that separation, wonderful. And yet, what you can do is have available outside the context of the pulpit, but make it available so that the congregants can learn, can gain that understanding, can get those fundamental perspectives through a trusted person within the congregation, or a trusted person that they bring in to speak to the congregation outside of the pulpit.
Well, thank you, Casey. Give us your full mailing address in Kannapolis, North Carolina, and we'll have cvbbs.com ship that out to you. We'll ship out the copy of Not All Conservatives Are Constitutionalists. We have Joe in Slovenia. Dear Brother Chris, thanks for another great topic and guest. Is it the case that the reason not all conservatives are constitutionalists is due at least in part to the fact that many are not committed to accepting authoritative standards of truth outside themselves, i.e. the Constitution, but rather prefer to rely on their own subjective experience, intuition, reasoning, and plain selfish pragmatism, etc.? Is it true that we can live in the same way? Is it true that we can, is it true that we can in the same way explain why not all conservative Christians are biblicists, but rather mix scripture with pietism, fundamentalism, and revivalism?
Hear, hear. I cheer the question with yes. It does come down to that, and it really comes down to, even from the last question, where's the education? What are the fundamentals that are being taught? How are they being understood? And that's why I always preface everything that I do from the point that this is all an anthology. None of this stuff is my stuff. This has all been written before. And as Proverbs 1:9 says, there's nothing new under the sun. So when we take a look at that, we understand that, then I really believe that the answer is absolutely we need to get back to those fundamentals, and the question simply is yes is the answer.
And thank you very much, Joe. Thank you also for providing an American address in Georgia where your daughter lives so that cvbbs.com can ship all conservatives are not constitutionalists out to you without the overseas shipping cost. Thank you very much. And everybody, it seems, in politics claims to be some kind of a constitutionalist. You have the most left-wing of political candidates or elected officials talking about how often they think President Trump or conservatives or Republicans are violating the Constitution. So you're wondering how could both sides of the aisle be so aggressively, at least in their words, claiming to be faithful to the Constitution. Now, could it be that the dividing line here is whether you are an originalist and whether you view the Constitution as a living document?
And that's a simple, correct answer. It becomes, again, from an ideological perspective of what do they understand the Constitution to be, and then where do they take it from a historical perspective. Those that claim it to be a living Constitution, their ideology does not want what your last question said. They don't want the truth. They don't want that hierarchy that's there. They don't want to submit to the sovereignty of God. So if you can manipulate everything, including and make it a living document, that being the Constitution, and then that being the Word of God, then you can contrive it to be anything you want it to be. If you're an originalist, as you say, or you go to original intent, then you have to take it from that truth historical perspective, to which, you know, we have to look at the Word of God from His truth, from His perspective, and, you know, when we really study the history in the full context, then we get the understanding of what God's trying to do in space and time.
Well, before we run out of time, I want you to have 5 minutes of uninterrupted time where you can speak freely and unburden your heart and mind to leave with our audience what you most want etched in their hearts and minds before this program is over.
I think real quick is that as the questions, especially the last questions, went through to the idea that we have to have that truth, we have to have that clear understanding that man can contrive anything. And we even see that in academia as well as in some of the pulpits that are out there. So the idea is people study, learn, find that truth, search the scriptures, understand first and foremost that God is sovereign over all. And that means also that political leaders should be challenged to understand that they are under the sovereignty of God as well. And when they understand that they come under His sovereignty, that then they need to understand those fundamental biblical principles that then transcend into what is good governance. So when we talk about labels, whether it be constitutionalist or conservative or whatever, it's what are the true principles upon which liberty may be sustained for a civil society that looks to the sovereignty of our living God for that which He has us to execute for the purposes of His gospel here and now.
Well, we have Bobby in Hartsdale, New York, who asks, can your guest be bold enough to identify by name prominent political figures that he believes are conservatives but not constitutionalists?
They're in the back of the book. So right off the top of my head, you know, I will go with Paul Ryan, I'll go with John McCain, I'll go with the head of the Senate. I mean, they're on and on and on. They go right down, and they never did finish the story, and we don't have time to, about our local election. But think about even those that are in your local arena. Remember, they all take an oath to the Constitution of your individual state and to the federal Constitution. So we're not just talking about at a national level. We're talking about all the way to the local level. Anytime someone raises their hand, even in the bureaucracies, have to take an oath to the Constitution of the state in which they may be participating in, or at the federal level, to the federal Constitution. So that's why many bureaucrats break that oath. But that's another whole different discussion.
We have John in Bangor, Maine, who asks, there is even disagreement amongst pro-life Christians as to whether there should be a an amendment to the Constitution specifically and more clearly prohibiting the crime of infanticide, i.e. abortion. What is your guest's opinion on this?
I talk about Article 5 in general, and there's a lot of stuff going on with that, you know, in my last book and seminars and all of that. So my opinion is Article 5 is very, very specific. It's built to be difficult for a reason. And relative to abortion, this may raise the hair on the back of the neck of John, is that it's really a state's rights issue, according to the way that the federal Constitution is supposed to be in operation. The Supreme Court was absolutely wrong in the decision they made with Roe versus Wade. It should always be something that is determined at the state level, which means you, me, every individual in our states must be involved to cause our states to have the right people to enact the proper laws for our civil society in a moral framework. And that's how our republic is supposed to operate, that the federal government should not be making these determinations. So no to any constitutional amendment, because in a functioning republic as we should have, it should be a states' rights issue.
You know, when I first heard about that concept years ago, when Ron Paul was promoting that idea, I was upset at first because I thought it was a softer approach to infanticide, the nation's worst crime, if you will. But then I didn't even realize this at the time when I first reacted in that negative way. I had since found out that murder is a state crime. It's a crime against the state, and there's only certain there are a few things that make murder a federal crime, but the murder in general is a crime against the state and is a state issue. I didn't know that before.
Yes, correct.
So therefore,
and that's what a lot of people don't know, and that's the whole thing, is we don't understand the functioning of a republic. And because what happened, as I say, it's the Hamiltonian effect has finally taken effect, in that we have the states are all globbed in to a national government. So we need to take and reverse that and get back to what does it mean under the rule of a federalism within our republic.
We have, let's see here. We have Kathy in Suffolk County, Long Island, who says, how can I purchase your books? I Googled Tom Novolis online, and I could not find the source of where to purchase his books anywhere.
They are on Amazon, the Book Patch, and if you go to SamuelAdamsReturns.com, you can get to the books there as well.
Great. And also, there are a couple of other websites that we have here. The Samuel Adams Center for Political Science. Let's not forget that their website is sacps.org. sacps.org. That's the Samuel Adams Center for Political Science. Now, you mentioned SamuelAdamsReturn.com, but we have also SamuelAdamsReturns.net. Is that a different website?
Yes. Yes, it is. At SamuelAdamsReturns.net is where the archives of the radio program and the YouTube for the radio program is all housed, as well as I have blogging there on that website, too.
So we have both SamuelAdamsReturns.com and SamuelAdamsReturns.net also. Well, I want to thank you so much, Tom, for being on the show again. I want to thank all of our listeners who wrote in questions. And I hope that you all have a safe and blessed and happy weekend and Lord's Day, and a truly God-honoring Lord's Day. And I look forward to hearing from you all and your questions next week for our guests. But I hope you all always remember for the rest of your lives that Jesus Christ is a far, far greater Savior than you are a sinner.